GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Hello and welcome to the final hurling show of 2018 here on Off the Ball, brought to you by Boyle Sports. I'm Shane Stapleton, and with me again is Michael Verney of the Irish Independent and former Offaly hurler. How are you doing?
How are you, Shane? Bit emotional, isn't it?
Tots of emotion. It certainly is. It certainly is. But, like, what a finale we had. I mean, the All-Ireland final itself, because of all the wides, it kind of felt like maybe it wasn't the greatest game of the year. Of course it wasn't. But it was still a great contest within that. And the last 10 minutes, I mean, what were they like for you? It was just a roller coaster. Like, the atmosphere was incredible.
It was phenomenal. The first 55 minutes kind of just went past, and you're kind of just thinking, oh no, it's not going to be this kind of damn squib to this unbelievable season. And I was actually sitting at the back of the press box, so there was, you know, there's fans like literally right behind you. And about when Dowling got the goal, I actually turned around, it was an old man there, and I shook hands with him and I said, thank God. I said, you know, you'll forgive us for 94 and all this kind of crack. And 5 minutes later, then I turned around, there was another man beside him just bawling, crying at the expectation that, oh Jesus, this is real again, where this is happening all over again and we're losing our chance. And I've never experienced anything like the last 15 or 20 minutes. It was phenomenal. And for Galway to be able to do that, given how bad they had played and how wrong everything had went, was phenomenal as well. The funny thing was, I didn't actually think Limerick panicked at any stage or anything like that. It was just the way it happened, and it was a great conclusion, and in fairness, the right result based on how Limerick performed on the day.
Yeah, so like that 8 minutes, I mean, did you think that Galway were going to do it at that point?
Yeah, I kind of got the feeling, you just, the ball starts rolling and you just think it's going to stay rolling. The free was very far out. Like, if that had been in the middle, I really would have fancied him. But when you go at the angle, it's probably bringing another 15 or 20 yards onto it, realistically. And it was on target. But you knew when he hit it that it wasn't going to have the legs. But in fairness to James Owens, he didn't stop the drama there. He let the ball break. They had a chance to win the ball if it was there. And in fairness to Tom Condon, something actually, and it was only when I was chatting to somebody yesterday that I realised it, that when Tom Condon catches the ball, he hand passes it off and he runs into Jason Flynn. He actually runs into him, and I just looked at after. Only the final whistle was blown there, and then it easily could have been a free in, and he could have been villain number one.
Not to mention the fact that he must have surely taken 8 or 9 steps coming out with the ball as well.
Exactly,
but look,
yeah.
I think at that stage, James Owens had to let it go. We're going to have Graham Mulcahy coming up on the show in a few minutes. He's the man who scored the, like, what, you know, what a feat to say, I've scored the point that won our county in All-Ireland. First All-Ireland in 45 years. There was a great picture that went up on Twitter there, I think it was the day after, of the Limerick leader back in 1973. I think it was the day after. It'll probably come up on the screen there shortly. And look, there it is. Welcome home, the heroes. The price was a penny back then.
It's great, isn't it? In fairness, like, yeah.
It really is brilliant. It's great stuff. And I mean, as good and all as it would have been for Galway to win it a second time over, like, it's hard to beat a massive famine being ended, and Galway themselves, they felt that last year.
It was amazing. Like, 45 years as well, I think 5 final defeats kind of in the meantime as well, and obviously 94 and 96 when they were playing 15 on 14 for the majority of the game against Wexford and would have really felt they should have won that game. And obviously 2007 maybe been hit with the sucker punch early in the game as well. It was just brilliant. Yeah, I've like, there are certain times when you're in this job when you're just like, Jesus, where else would you rather be? And when the Cranberries started blaring out in Croke Park, it was just phenomenal. And that the man who was crying with 3 minutes to go was literally just, he was just babbling for about 10 or 15 minutes. And it was just like, there was a young kid beside him just crying. It was amazing. That picture that went up on Twitter as well of the man with his 2 kids, like, that was, it's just, that's what it's all about, yeah, realistically, you know.
Actually, like, it kind of brings me back to the final few minutes as well. As Michael Fennelly said when he won Hurler of the Year in 2011, it would make the hair stand up on your backside.
God, I hope there's not too many there.
But like, even Alan English from the journalist as well, he put up a picture on Twitter which had like his father's grave and the cross, and somebody had put a Limerick sort of scarf around it as well. It was one of those things that really seemed to be so emotive. It just really got to the core of people what happened. And I mean, like, for yourself, what does hurling mean for you? What's your first sort of memory of it?
Oh, sure. Like, sure. What would you be doing without it, realistically? Be it the training or getting ready for training or the crack in the dressing room after or getting ready for matches and all that. And that's like, I don't really know what you'd do without it, realistically. Like, my granduncle actually would have been heavily involved in GAA and would have kind of passed down. I never got to meet the man, unfortunately, but would have passed down a great kind of love of GAA, and my family as well. My mother and father both kind of keen GAA supporters as well. So it means everything. It's the talk at the dinner table. It's the talk of the parish. It's the talk of everything in your town or village or wherever you're from. You know, it's an amazing thing. And I was just looking Sunday, like, I was young when Offaly were kind of, it was only, you know, 12 or 13 when Offaly were doing well, and you just, the craving that you'd have just to get back there and just, I suppose, feel that sense of kind of pride of your county going so well and just leaving everything out there. Like, that's what it's all about, realistically.
Yeah, I remember one of the first memories I had of, like, having a hero when I was a young lad was Aidan Ryan from my hometown of Burra Salee as well. I don't know, was it the shock of blonde hair or whatever? He looked a bit like Klinsman running around the place. But, like, he would have been the closest thing to a hero that I would have had growing up. And, like, that famous goal he got against Cork when he blocked down two men,
got
the ball up, whipped it in the net, and the whole of the crowd came on the field with him.
Yeah,
like,
he
I think I did an interview with him a few years after, and he said he thinks someone on a wheelchair was actually brought out onto the field as well. So you had a particular memory you wanted to talk about from a 19... Well, you probably weren't born at the time, the 1981 All-Ireland.
No, it was five years before I was born, actually. And it actually came up on the game there a couple of weeks ago, and someone tweeted, I'd love to feel the same emotion or kind of buzz from a county or something as the man dancing behind the goals. And I don't know if we have a picture of him there. He does a little hop, skip and a jump. That's my granduncle that I mentioned there beforehand. Yeah, and like, that's on every hurling video that's ever shown, reeling in the ears, everything. He's always there doing a little hop, skip and a jump. And he was a treasure of the county board for years as well. And it's just like maybe you don't realise the significance of it over time, but like, he's immortalised, like, and our, I suppose, family name is immortalised in GAA, and probably when Johnny Flaherty definitely hand-passed the ball, not a throw, he definitely hand-passed the ball to the net. Like, that's going to be shown forever and ever, and it's great just to be associated with that. Like, it's a great memory to have, and I never met the man, unfortunately, but by all accounts, he was a GAA fanatic.
No doubt about it. We want to talk about teams of the year. We're going to get your team of the year up on screen first, and you can go through it for us. And just for those that are listening on podcasts as well, you might read it out in order.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. I just talked to a couple of people maybe forgotten the other day on the Sunday game team of the year. Owen Murphy is a no-brainer for me. Nicky Quaid's flick in the semi-final would have him an honourable second. Sean Finn, probably the most underrated player in the game. He kept some amount of really good forwards quiet. Dahi Burke, maybe not his probably best game on Sunday. Again, no one really got inside him one-on-one, but he was brilliant throughout the year, in fairness, and his battles with John
Conlon.
We'll
do some analysis later on that looks at the Galway full back line,
His battle with John Conlon in the two semi-finals was brilliant. Richie English, again, I thought the two cornerbacks were phenomenal and so clever on the ball as well. Real kind of heads-up hurlers when they get the ball. Pádraic Mannion, as we said, was a 7.5 or an 8 in nearly every game, even when things were going bad. Declan Hannan, I thought he set an unbelievable tone in the first half, the last day, when he stepped out in front of Canning. Canning was kind of waiting for a pass from Manny, stepped out in front of him, popped it over the bar. Dermot Byrne as well, just a little, you know, any hurling kind of nerd would notice. Pádraic Mannion deserves to be 5 this year and not cornerback.
Yeah.
He deserves to be in his position.
And he might be hurler of the year.
He could well be, and Dermot Byrne is 7. Byrne, I think, eradicated the kind of... the tendency he had to take pot shots and deliver, like, you know, booming ball into the forward line, and played so much smarter this year. Him and Hannan and Dan Morrissey were huge in the half-back line. Darragh Fitzgibbon loses out midfield, which is harsh, but I thought in the particularly the last 4 or 5 games that David Burke was just outstanding for Galway. And again on Sunday, it's easy to be a guy playing well when a team is playing well, but invariably he plays well when others around him aren't playing well. Keane Lynch is the other midfielder, probably sacrificed his game maybe this year to be more a kind of a team player out in the middle of the field, but still had the instances of kind of wizardry that we associate with him. Peter Duggan, wing forward, top scorer in the championship, some phenomenal scores. Canning, again, always stood up when his team needed him, had a better year than last year. I don't think you could have a team of the year without TJ Reid, been honest with you.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
And I know the league is probably forgotten at this stage, but some of his championship performance, the second half against Wexford, the day against Limerick as well, you know, he was the 2 days against Galway as well, especially when things were going wrong. The man just always stands up. For me, he's the best hurler in the country.
Yeah.
And I think he has to be on the team. Then you have Graham Mulcahy, everything. We'll chat to him now in a minute. All scores off his left, I believe in the championship, which is phenomenal. I was actually chatting to Stephen Brown from Bury. He played for Offaly for 4 or 5 years, and he said to me on Twitter that every score he got in his intercounty career was off his left. But John Condon, full forward, if Clare had gotten to the final, there's a fair chance he'd be hurler of the year. If he had clipped a couple of points,
he wouldn't
have been far off. And Seamus Harnedy is probably harshly done by, that he's the only Cork man on the team. But again, kind of probably defiance, I'd say, is probably the best word to describe him. He's just, when things are going wrong or something needs to be done, he's always the one to deliver. A couple of people unlucky. Darragh Fitzgibbon, very unlucky. Tom Morrissey, very unlucky also. They're probably the two standouts.
Mm. I actually did a poll after the All-Ireland final asking people, who's your Limerick player of the year? So I put up Keane Lynch, Declan Hannan, Graham Mulcahy and Aaron Galan. And Graham Mulcahy got 38%. So, you know, in terms of the hurler of the year, he's probably third or fourth favourite, but he came out first on that. Mm. We'll just come to my team of the year then as well. Like, plenty of them are the same. I mean, that's unsurprising. A couple of them are different, so it'll come up there now. Nicky Quaid in goals. The reason being, I just think that his puck outs were absolutely sensational and were worth so many scores. And Barry Cleary had a tweet online, which we'll come to in a while, about an assist chart. And he's essentially, according to Barry, assisting 3 scores a game,
which
is incredible for goals. And just, you know, I actually thought, like, for years, I think Clare have struggled in goals. I don't think they've been fully reliable in there.
Limerick.
But, yeah, sorry, Clare. No,
Clare. Sorry, Clare, yeah.
So I'm giving an honourable mention to Donald Toohey as well, because he made a couple of incredible saves this year, and especially one from Conor Cooney
that
in the semi-final.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Really stood out. Just to come back to the team then as well, Sean Finn, cornerback, you mentioned him. Dahi Burke, Richie English. Actually, it's the same backs. Now, I've gone for Darragh O'Donovan in midfield. The reason being is summed up on a tweet from Hurling Talk. If we can get that tweet up there, might be catching the lads.
These boys are great for their stats, in fairness.
They're very good. So I've Darragh Fitzgibbon in midfield as well. I think he's been exceptional. But just for Darragh O'Donovan, Hurling Talk 1 put up a tweet saying he's Limerick's glue. 10 successful passes in the final, 1 unsuccessful pass, 4 dispossessions, 5 breaking balls won, 4 passes received off teammates, 7 possessions in between Limerick's 45-metre line and goal line, and 5 possessions in the Galway half. He called him Hurling's N'Golo Kante. I think he's really exceptional. And like Keane Lynch, I've left off the team, but, you know, I think he's exceptional and is deservedly in the conversation for
the her. Midfield is a pure minefield this year. Yeah. There's 3 or 4 at least into 2, and it's difficult. Like,
yeah, and even the likes of, if Jamie Barron had a few more games, would he be in the conversation? I can see why you're saying Davy Burke. Like, Darragh Fitzgibbon, you know, he went to centre forward against Clare in the Munster final, and that made a big difference. Mm. But I still think he did enough. Just coming back to the team then, Peter Duggan, not going to debate that. Reid Canning, yeah, absolutely no problem. Graham Mulcahy, John Conlon, and I went with Patrick Horgan. I can fully see why you go with Seamus Harnedy as well, because he's an absolute warrior, he's a ball winner, but Patrick Horgan was sensational as well, and some of his scores this summer were brilliant. I don't think he was fed enough against Limerick in the semi-final, and I think that's the rock that Cork have to perish on. Who's your hurler of the year?
Joe Canning's my hurler of the year, to be honest with you, and I know it's a funny one that the two lads marketing each other could get nominated for man of the match the other day, but like it's so many things were going wrong for Galway, and he just stood up yet again. That the last half an hour, the final, you expected him almost to put over the free. That was the way he was kind of going, and he shouldn't, because it was probably a 1 in 100 shot. I just thought he was brilliant. He lifted him over the line against Clare the second day. He was brilliant the first day until he went off. He's brilliant against Kilkenny the second day as well. I just thought he was outstanding, closely followed by Pádraig Mannion. But there's a fair chance that whoever the Limerick nominee is, that they'll get it because of a split vote probably in the Galway camp. But who's that going to be? It could be Graham McCatty, it could be Declan Hannan, it could be Keane Lynch. It's hard to know.
Yeah, it's hard to know, and there could be a split vote in there. You just don't know, like the last couple of years.
Players, of course, vote for the player of the year as well, so.
Yeah. I'd probably just about go with Graham Mulcahy and Pádraig Mannion right in beside him. Yeah, it's a tough one. Young hurler of the year. I mean, it might be decided with the under-21 final this Sunday. It seems to be a two-horse race between Kyle Hayes and Darragh Fitzgibbon.
It's a funny one. Kyle Hayes probably not going to get an All-Star. It's weird. If Fitzgibbon gets an All-Star, Kyle Hayes could get Young Hurler of the Year. But do you know what I mean?
Cause there are optics to be looked after.
There are indeed. Obviously, the Young Hurler of the Year, again, is voted by the players again. So it'll be interesting to see. I thought Kyle Hayes, particularly in the first 6 or 7 minutes of the second half, was just phenomenal. And his work rate up and down the field is just outrageous. And he just completely got Gerard McInerney out of his comfort zone. No, I'd probably give it to Darragh Fitzgibbon, though, I've been honest.
Mm. Okay, well, look, we're going to throw to a video now of Shane Dowling on the importance of the entire squad. He joined Joe Malai on Off the Ball on Tuesday evening.
So, one thing I have a massive, massive problem with is that I just can't understand why 26 names go on the programme or you can't tag out the panel that's there. Because I'll tell you something, Joe, right? And I genuinely mean this. I keep on saying, I can only speak for this particular county from what I've seen. Them lads work every bit as hard as the lads that play and the lads that even make the panel. And we had a meeting, I suppose, after the semi-final, because, you know, coming into the final, there's a big circus, and we had to nail down a lot of stuff. That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
And the one thing I piped up and said in the meeting is, I said, I firmly believe we should be getting 36 jerseys off of O'Neill's, and all of them should be labelled as the same as number one, as is 36. And John Kyler's response to me was, that's already sorted. So everyone can... One thing we do in this band is we appreciate everyone. And that's why everyone, as you well know, including Paul Brown that was injured, ran out onto that field the other day. They got their photograph taken. Okay, they can't take part in the warm-up, so they put their tracksuit back on, but they all ran back onto the field in their jersey like everyone else did at the end of the whistle. And that to us, that's a huge thing for us. Our panel is massive. And I suppose, well, some people, as you just said, they mightn't get as much credit from the outer world. Within us, we'll always appreciate what the whole panel has done.
Shane Dowling, he's some character, Michael, isn't he?
Unbelievable.
A journalist dream.
An absolute journalist dream, yeah. But you can see the emotion just pouring out of him, like, in fairness. And one of the biggest things that happened this year was probably John Kiely's management of him and other guys as well, other subs in particular, to be able to keep them happy, because that's not an easy thing to do. And there was guys that didn't get on. Pat Ryan had got on nearly every game of the year and didn't get on at the weekend. But by all accounts, we're looking at lads and talking to lads, like, they're all as happy with not playing a part as playing a part. And that's an unbelievable thing and an unbelievable kind of trait to have in a squad.
Yeah, and they're all contributing. Even if you think of Barry Murphy at the start of the year, scored a goal against Tipperary, exactly, and probably didn't really get an opportunity afterwards. Look, I think we all grow up in the local park thinking, you know, you're soling towards goal, saying loudly to your little brother or your cousin or whatever that, you know, we're two points up or 2 points down, and last minute shot, it's a goal, we've won the All-Ireland. Very few people get to live out that thing where they scored a winner in an All-Ireland final. And I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by a man who has done that, Graham Mulcahy. Graham, how are you doing?
How are you? Hello, Shane. How are you, Michael?
How's it going, Graham?
Graham, can you tell us what's the last few days been like, first of all?
I suppose the celebrations have been phenomenal. I think from the moment getting off the train in Caliber Station and going down O'Connell Street and into the Gaelic grounds, and in Adair on Monday night, on Tuesday night, and in Galbally last night, and John Kiely's home club, I think the welcome and the people that have turned out to celebrate with us has just made it all worthwhile.
Yeah, and just like to jump back to the last couple of minutes of that game, you'd gotten eight points ahead. It probably felt like, at any moment did you think, yes, we've kind of got it done, we're just going to ride out whatever storm and it'll be fine?
Yeah, I think we were 8 points up, and I think there was a couple of injuries, and there was a bit of a lull in the game, and at that stage maybe lads had kind of thought to themselves that the game was over and we had it. But I suppose credit to Galway and to, in particular, to Joe, they really kind of pulled it back and put us to the pin of our collar, and we were sweating for the last couple of minutes, like we thought that this was gone from us. So,
and describe to us actually your goal in the first half, because you caught a ball that was hit in from Kyle Hayes on the spin, and it just seemed to be pandemonium from there, and you just bundled it into the net.
Yeah, I suppose it's every guy's dream growing up to get a goal in the All-Ireland final, and I suppose I would have crossed my mind many a time, but I suppose when I think about it in my dreams, I would have been putting the ball into the roof of the net. So I suppose to get a goal like that in the All-Ireland final is a bit bizarre, but I'll certainly take it. I don't really know what happened. I just tried to keep the ball in front of me, really. It kind of was just bouncing all over the place, and I think luckily, I think James Skettle went to ground and it kind of got in underneath him somehow, but just bundled it over the line. I think it was, a lot of people are saying it's very similar to the goal in 1973 by a Kilmarnock man as well, Massey Dowling. So
it's a scuffery one.
Yeah.
It's good to know he's claiming it anyway. It's a bit of a kind of a Harry Kane moment, isn't it?
But just to go back then to the final couple of minutes and the injury time, can you tell us what was going through your head? Was there kind of memories of the 94 All-Ireland against Meath County?
I suppose not in particular. I suppose with I think it was about the 7th minute injury time, I got the ball off Richie McCarthy coming out of defence, and I saw Keane Lynch across the field free and just tried to give a pass to him. And unfortunately for me, it went straight to Niall Burke, and he put the ball over the bar, and I suppose there and then that put them, I think, within a point of us. And if the ground could have opened up and swallowed me, I would have got in. But I suppose I was saying to myself, jogging back into my position, that I'd need to try and make amends for this. And I suppose with 2 minutes to go, to get that opportunity, I suppose thanks to Peter Casey and his work rate, it was massive for me to make amends for that.
You had enough time, actually. Like, the way it turned out, you had the ball, you turned around, you probably had enough time to think about the gravity of the situation, did you? Like, what's going through your head as you're about to swing on that ball?
I suppose I'd done it so many times, it probably came naturally to me. I suppose I turned onto my left, and lucky enough, there wasn't someone within 2 or 3 yards of me. And I just suppose I just do what I do every day in training, I suppose, on the training ground. And I suppose just went for the shot, and luckily enough for me, it went over, because a number of them hadn't gone over for us in the minutes previous. So I was just lucky that I suppose I was the one in that position at that time.
And then the free that Joe Canning stood over at the Hogan stand side on his own 45, like, incredibly tough shot. But like, what's going through your head there?
Yeah, I suppose I was actually standing directly behind it, just praying to God that he wouldn't get the connection that he usually does. So lucky for us, he didn't.
And Kyle Hayes said he was running around in front of him trying to put him off, he said.
and then the final whistle goes. I mean, put us there. Tell us what's going on in your head just as that final whistle goes from James Owens.
Yeah, I know. It was just surreal. I remember Peter Casey was myself, and we met each other. We were just jumping all over each other. And then I suppose when it really did set in, I just kind of fell to the ground, and it was just, I suppose, thankful for everything. And Richie McCarthy was trying to pick me up off the ground, but I was just drained. And after that, I didn't really know what to do with myself. I was just copying everyone going around the field, because I suppose you just don't know what you're going to do in these situations until they arise.
And like, the few minutes in the dressing room afterwards, what was that like?
Yeah, I suppose the dressing room was where we've got the most enjoyment this year, before training and after training, with the sing songs we'd have on even a normal evening. And I suppose after winning in Northern Ireland, I suppose that we stepped that up a bit again. So it was fantastic in the dressing room after. It's something you'll never forget.
I think there's going to be a trend set as well between the sing songs. I think there'll be teams going for 99s after training, I'd say, as well, fairly regular too.
Yeah, what's been different with you, Graham, this year? Because, you know, Limerick have kind of, over the number of years, you know, got to an All-Ireland semi-final in 2013, the same in 2014, won a Munster around that time. But what's been the difference with kicking on this year?
Yeah, I suppose I've been involved in those years, and I suppose more so this year, the group of young players that come in, they expect to win, because they're being used to being winning at minor and under 21 level. And I suppose going into All-Ireland semi-finals and finals, you do need that bit of experience or that attitude. Because the likes of the Galways and the Kilkennys come back at you, you need to know that you've done it before, and you need to have the confidence to know that you can do it. And I suppose that mightn't have been there other years, whereas this year the guys just have no fear.
After the game, in the post-match press conference, Dara O'Donovan was talking about some white-collar boxing night that she'd had, and I think he mentioned that he had fought with Kyle Hayes, which might be somewhat alike. Who were you thrown in against? Because, you know, all respect, but you're probably not the biggest guy on the panel.
No, I'm probably the smallest, but lucky enough, I had a trip to New York with my girlfriend, so I missed that. A strategic move for me, I think.
Yeah. But like, what has John Kiely brought to this team? Because, you know, you were there with several different managements and it didn't quite happen. Yeah. So, I mean, it's probably not all down to just an influx of new players. He's obviously brought something too.
No, John's a savage guy. Like, I think his morals, the way he just thinks you have to be a good person, and he tries to instill that in all of us. And I suppose the biggest thing about John, like, John was involved in us in 2013, and from there until now with the 21s and with us last year and this year, John's always looking to learn and looking to grow and looking to change and adapt with the game. And that's massive. Like a manager could easily say, this is the way I do this. This is the way I've always done it. This is the way I'm going to keep on doing it. But John, in fairness to him, he's always looking to get that extra bit, and what more can I do, and what more can this person do? And I think that's a huge testament to John, and I suppose it's the reason maybe we're here today.
And like, those of us that are even neutral for the All-Ireland final, Michael was talking about how towards the very end of the game, an older man just kind of, he could see him welling up, and Michael said even himself, he was getting a bit emotional. I mean, it was unbelievable in there. But like, in the few days since you've won it, or even on the day itself, What have fans been saying to you? Because, you know, it has been 45 years. It's been an incredibly long length of time for what is a strong hurling county.
Yeah, people are absolutely thrilled. Like, even going into Camalach there on the Tuesday and meeting everyone that I'd know personally, like, they're just absolutely delighted for us as a group of players, but more so for their families and their friends that have been around so long and supported teams for so long. And like, we met people that are in their 90s, or even we met a woman who was 101 and who was at the final in the 30s. Like, and see what it meant to them people is just phenomenal. Like, you don't think about that going into the games. Mm. But I suppose seeing it afterwards just shows you what it's all about, really.
And Declan Hannan also mentioned some of the players that would have passed in previous years that have left the panel as well. You know, you kind of soldiered with your own club mates, Paddy O'Brien and Gavin O'Mahony, for example, and, you know, you played in a club final with them as well, which they can work out as well. I mean, is it kind of bittersweet in a way when you meet them because you're thinking they could still possibly be involved in some way, or is it just, you know, pure delight that you're all sharing?
Yeah, certainly. I met Gavin and Paddy for a drink last night in my local, so... Like, they're absolutely delighted for me and delighted for the group, but it is very tough on them because they've given so much to Kilmallock and to Limerick over the past few years. Like, they're almost as deserving as of an All-Ireland medal as I am. So it's a tough one for them, but I suppose that's the nature of sport.
Yeah, and when you think of, like, maybe when you would have first come on the panel, or, you know, 2010, the start of 2010, there was basically a player kind of walkout as well. I mean, did you ever think back in those days that it could get to this point?
I suppose not. Like, I remember, obviously, a lot of players left in 2009, but I suppose some of us decided to stay on. Myself and Paul Brown, I suppose, we're still remaining from that group of players. But and even Brian Geary was one of the guys that left. But I remember Brian saying to me, like, not to leave, just to take your opportunity to get games under your belt. And I suppose that was probably the start of my career, and I'd be very thankful for those days. But I suppose looking back on them, they were extremely tough days, and you don't think you're ever going to get to this stage, but luckily enough, we did.
Mm. A stat went out since the final saying that every score you've had this year has been on your left-hand side, and someone suggested that the other side of your hurley must be clean as the whistle. Have you ever scored off your other side?
Not this year, I don't think. I think maybe the one I tapped in against Carlo might have been just on that side of the hurley, but no, luckily enough, I suppose I've a decent enough sidestep that I can try and make space for myself, and I'm obviously more comfortable on my left than favour my left. But I can strike off my right, and because I got a few points this year in the club championship. But I think backs now in future, probably just I need to probably work a bit more on my right side now, because backs will be just running onto my left all the time, I think.
We're probably doing you a disservice mentioning that at all, so you'll forgive us for that one anyway. It's all in good spirits.
I don't know, it's true, like, so.
So retain it next year then, that's the handy part.
Oh, I know, yeah, that's going to be extremely difficult. Like, the formula of the championship to build the momentum we built this year, like, is going to be extremely hard to do it again. And you're going to have the Galways coming back at you. You're going to have Tipperary, who didn't have a fantastic year this year. Like, they still have a savage group of players that are going to be bulling for North Ireland. And you've Waterford as well, like, under new management. Like, they're going to be a new animal as well. And you've got so many teams out there, like the youth, the Cork are building there, and the 21s. Final the weekend, and they have a savage bunch of players as well, and it's going to be extremely hard to retain it. Even to get out of Munster is going to be a difficulty.
Well, look, thanks very much for that, Graham. Congratulations on the All-Ireland win, fully deserved. We'll chat to you again soon.
Thanks very much, guys.
Well done.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And yeah, he's my pick for a hurler of the year, I think.
We talked about it before, like, his acceleration and then how quickly he decelerates to get away from a back has just been phenomenal. And invariably, when he takes a shot, it seems to go over, particularly off that left. Like, you know, I'm amazed he's actually taking credit for that goal as well.
I know, we'll give it to him now. Come on.
He's been brilliant, because and Eamon Sweeney did a piece in our paper on Monday where he said, like, last year against Clare, when they were beaten in Munster semi-final, he was taken off at half time, and then in a subsequent game taken off after about 50 minutes. Like, so. Probably the easy thing for John Kiely to do this year would have been to give, you know, Peter Casey or whoever, a younger fella, a go. And it's amazing, their team has virtually stayed the same. And that's why Shane Dowling was a sub, that's why Kevin Downs wasn't getting a run, that's why David Dempsey wasn't getting a run. And Kiely obviously gave these guys, he gave them their backing and gave them you know, fate of the management, and they repaid it in spades. Like, their team basically didn't change throughout the year. Like, from the Munster League nearly the whole way through, one or two places here or there, and it was just so settled. Like, and the great thing is that they have next year is that it won't be as settled next year, because guys that have come in now a farm, and they have several guys that they can parachute in, and there's several guys who are on the line that are going to be very keen to be part of it next year.
Absolutely, absolutely. Keane Lynch joined Gerra and Owen on Off the Ball AM during the week, and here's what he had to say.
Mother actually hopped over the fence and got onto the pitch in Crow Park yesterday. I'd say there's an old warrant out for her, but you know, it means so much to everyone, like, which is unbelievable. So.
I don't know if you've seen the photograph yet, but there's an amazing photograph of you and your mum just hugging on the pitch.
Is there? I didn't see it now at all. She probably has it already herself.
Oh, it's class. It's in the papers. Is it? Yeah, yeah. We found it on info anyway, so we'll send it to you. But it's just...
It'll be great.
It's just brilliant. Did you talk to her? Do you remember anything you actually said to her?
No. Even lads were saying what they feel like after the game. Like, but I kind of put the head down. I actually struggled to breathe for a few minutes, like, because... You're kind of saying, geez, we're after winning all Ireland, like a dream. It's a dream come true. But I remember the mother, she jumped up out of nowhere and kind of, I grabbed her and just put the head on her shoulder. And it was actually a moment where I could actually just breathe for a second and kind of take in my old surroundings and realise, you know what, this is what it's about. You know, she was the woman that was there for me from the very beginning with the whole family. Like, and just to see her there on the pitch, whether the shorts after her or the shorts not, like, just see her smiling and going around to everyone. Do you know what puts it all into perspective, really?
I don't know if your phone is charged, but Tommy has just WhatsApped you the picture there if you want to have a look at it. I don't know if you're getting photographs or if you managed to plug it in last night, you were doing pretty well.
Oh, Tommy Rooney, hold on here now a second.
There you go, that's it.
If that's the only message on his phone this morning now, he hasn't.
I have another message. Oh, jeez, I see it. Some hit me, don't I? Jesus, yeah, that's lovely now, in fairness. She'd be delighted with that.
Yeah, I've had some unusual pictures sent to me by Tommy Rooney as well, actually.
Jesus
say.
Christ.
we have a few...
Well, Tommy's not even here to defend himself.
We have a few different messages in here on social media, and keep them coming in. Olivia Fitzgerald on Facebook, what a week. Limna Kaboo. Joe Murray on YouTube. Aidan Hart had a very good year, apart from when he was sweeping against Clare in the first game. Kevin Coleman tweeted on my team of the year. I think that is spot on, but as good as Darrow Donovan was for Limerick, I think his partner was slightly more impactful throughout the year. And Lee Linnell, I think, on Twitter on my team of the year. No Galan, ? And over the year, Lynch was more effective than O'Donovan. So I'm getting hammered and not a word to you. But we had Keane Lynch on there talking about that photograph with his mother. Another photograph that really was quite striking this week. And warning, this is a pretty graphic image. But Paul Crummy, who's brother of Dublin captain Chris Crummy, he got a bit of an injury in a club game with Luke, and I think it might be a challenge match where basically one of the bars on his face guard is after on someone else's face guard is after passing through his arm.
Has that gone the whole way through? Yeah.
It's gone the whole way through, because there's a second image there as well which shows basically, it's absolutely horrendous.
I mean, sorry for laughing, put the emojis in there.
Yeah, that's from Buff Egan's Snapchat, actually. But I asked Chris Crummy what happened, and he said the bar of the face guard must have been cut or loose or something like that. But there's no major damage. He was very, very lucky. So that is an absolute...
Amazing. If it's not welded the whole way through, or if there's anything sticking out on a helmet like that, it can literally catch on to anything.
Well, it still looks like it makes no sense whatsoever.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. No, it doesn't make any sense.
And I think there was another one somewhere in the country as well where that happened as well.
Yeah, I saw another one recently enough as well, yeah. It's a dangerous game. That's why, I'm going to say it again, that's why I had my helmet on the table here last week. There's nothing sticking out. Everything is there, solid. It mightn't look great, but it does the job.
But your man's helmet looks slicker on Paul Crummy's arm than your one looks on your head. Okay, let's get into analysing the All-Ireland final. I did a piece for the Irish edition of the Times newspaper with a load of pitch maps and stuff like that we're going to go through now. But basically, we'll start off with the headline stats, which shows where the game was won and lost. And the thing that stands out more than anything else at the very start has to be the tackle count, which was 152 tackles put in by Limerick versus 101 against Galway. That says it all. Hunger's a great sauce.
Well, like, sometimes it's not a big science behind it. Like, it was amazing. Anytime, like, and the main picture in that Times piece is Gerard Mack running into Shamie Flanagan, but there was three other Limerick lads there. They were just hounding them everywhere. Anytime Galway took ball into contact in that middle third, they were just kind of, they were just swallowed up. Mm. And like, it's hard to explain hunger, but when you haven't won in so long, and I'm not saying that Galway weren't hungry or anything like that, but just Limerick were just ferocious everywhere. Like,
well, like, even think of the goals that Limerick got. And in the final 35 minutes of the game, and I'm including injury time in that, and there was almost 10 of those, Limerick got just three scores.
Right, yeah.
So it was actually the work rate that kept them ahead. And also, if you think the three goals, they were all turnovers. So
that's like that's the big thing. Turnovers slash mistakes.
Yeah.
Because Galway were in control of the situation each time. But like, the hits and the tackles, like, Flanagan left Pádraic Mannion on his arse after he missed the pickup for the first goal. The second goal, Adrian Toohey was blocked down, just a tackle, ferocious tackle from Peter Casey. And the second goal was, I don't know how, Tom Morrissey flicked the ball out, Gerard McInerney's hand. He actually flicked the ball straight out of his hand. Yeah. Like, that's phenomenal tackling, like, serious work.
Well, we're going to get the Galway puckouts up on the screen for the first half here as well, and we'll describe them for people listening on podcast. But you can see plenty of those have gone to the backs, and it's basically from the end line to the 45, the 45 to the 45, and then the 45 to the far end line. Those are the three zones. So three puckouts went short inside their own 45. Sorry, seven puckouts went short in the first half from Galway. In the first half, and five of them were turned over on the second phase of play.
They had no problem letting them have the ball.
Oh yeah, like Adrian Toohey was allowed to have it, Dahi Burke was allowed to have it once or twice, and the same with John Hanbury as well. And the likes of Seamus Flanagan, the likes of Graham Mulcahy, who we've spoken to, they were all over them. They were stuck to them like white on rice, and that's the kind of thing that made a difference. Now, if we look at the Limerick puckouts in the first half as well, I think there was a very, very evident tactic from Limerick. John Kiely said, I'm not going to puck the ball down on Grod McInerney because he's 6 foot five or whatever he is. He's so dominant here. Pádraic Mannion is possibly the hurler in the year at this stage. So Aidan Hart is the guy I'm going to go after. So in the first half, Limerick won 14 puckouts out of 19. 11 of the 14 they won were hit over on top of Aidan Hart's flank. Now, that's not to suggest every puckout was won over him, but it was a very clear tactic, and you can see how effective it was.
They were giving themselves a chance that side. I think, like, it's amazing what nuggets you pick up throughout the year. I remember Jack O'Connor catching four puckouts over Hart, and Hart had a phenomenal year, but I remember catching four puckouts over him in the league quarter-final, and I remember just thinking, that's something you might see again. I mean, it's something that other teams might have a look at, because there really wasn't that many chinks of life for teams before that. But another thing, like, I couldn't get over the fact that Galway went back into the middle, that their three half-backs actually stood in the centre and allowed Limerick to break out, that they didn't hold their ground. I know it's easier said than done, looking down from the press box or whatever, but Limerick totally bossed things on the puck out. I remember at one stage as well, it was Hart's side as well, they put their two wing forwards the same side, so they were all in the middle, and then the two of them broke the same side.
Yeah.
And if you're a half-back, you're thinking, should I follow him here? Or do we need to get back over to the other side? And just the half second of confusion, I think Tom Morrissey ended up putting the ball over.
Well, you see, actually, that's a very good point, but the fuller kind of move on that was that Dermot Burns had been playing wing back at that stage. Joe Canning was on him. He dropped back to cornerback, got a short puck out, turned around, put it straight into a free Tom Morrissey up the line, who threw it straight over the bar. And that's kind of the cuteness of John Kiely on the line. He's figured out the puck out plan, and the players are all buying into it. You get so many free scores from this, and I mean, that that assist chart that Barry Cleary had up on the line that showed three assists for Nicky Quaid per game, three scoring attempt assists, it just kind of shows it all. If we look at the Galway shot map in the first half, we've got here that sort of red cone there, which is the scoring zone, really, which is the optimal area that teams want to be shooting inside. If you look at Galway there, how often are they shooting from inside that scoring zone? They really aren't that often. There's one, two, three, four, five. Five inside and a couple more. Sorry, four inside and two more on the perimeter of that scoring zone. So more often than not, Galway have been forced to shoot from ridiculous angles. And the question then is why? It's because, like, Limerick are filtering back that half-back line and midfield. They're absolutely piling the centre. So Galway have been forced out to the flank and shooting from unfavourable positions.
And everything, it was unfavourable positions, but it was under pressure as well.
Yeah.
There was a big difference between the Limerick wides in the first half in particular and the Galway wides. The Limerick, there's no such thing as a good wide, but Limerick were shooting from much more favourable positions, higher percentage kind of shots. Whereas Conor Cooney was kind of like, they were over his shoulder, they were under pressure, they were out to the side. And it was amazing. Limerick was just able to clog up that area and just make sure that no one really had a free shot at any stage in the game. And it was amazing. I just couldn't believe how much they bossed that. That was another element of the game, that they bossed and dictated how Galway were going to play and even where they were going to shoot from. It was phenomenal.
Mm. And that might have been something that Galway were dictating last year. I mean, if we look at their shots in the second half here as well, I think the way they've been coming up, again, it's a similar story. You look at the shots taken from between Galway's 45 and 65 in their own half. And like even where the fouls are happening, there's a lot of frees inside their own 65 there. Is that Limerick being cute, saying, if you're going to have to foul, foul good and early? I think it might possibly be. And because of their rate of tackling, 152 to 101, which is basically three Limerick tackles for every two Galway ones, you're obviously going to have more fouls as well. And a lot of Limerick people gave out afterwards that they had only two scores from frees, right, whereas Galway had eight. Well, I mean, if you're going to go out, you know, like a bunch of starving wolves, that kind of thing is going to happen. But overall, if you look at the 41 shots that Galway had in this game, just 10 of them came within that scoring zone and two more right on the perimeter. So they were being forced to shoot from odd areas all the time. The question I'd ask you, though, are Galway kind of architects of their own downfall here as well, because they're just going long ball to Johnny Glynn all day?
Well, like the first day against Clare, I couldn't believe that when the sweeper went back, I know they were up at the time, that it was just kind of a one-dimensional ball down on top of Johnny Glynn, and it kind of persisted. The second day, it was much more through the lines.
Yeah.
But something actually that Brendan Cummins has regularly said in our paper and said it in the build-up to the final is that he didn't think Galway were able to change approach mid-game or solve problems, shall we say, mid-game. And kind of when something different was thrown at them and when they weren't able to dictate terms, when they didn't get their start, they were unsure of what to do. But amazingly, like, there was the ball didn't go into Johnny Glynn. The right type of ball did not go anywhere near him. Even it was, I remember Pádraic Mannion hitting a ball into him the first half, and it just dropped short, and it was going to be around his feet.
And Mike Casey attacked it.
Yeah, and that suited him down to the ground. A lot of balls, Casey was able to hold him off, or Richie Mack was able to hold him off, and just let the ball break or let it go wide. And like even if they had been over reliant on that tactic, and I thought they had been, they still didn't. He didn't get enough ball for my liking at all. There wasn't five or six chances where he had to catch it and it was broken down on like that. It was one or two chances, which I thought was amazing. And in fairness to Glynn, he did well when he went back out wing forward and caught a couple of puckouts and that. Mm. But it was strange. It was very it was kind of tip-esque what they were doing this year. Like, yeah, it was long ball.
Put snow on that ball.
Yeah, it's a strange one.
Because you think of Conor Whelan, who I think has the potential to be a hurler of the year. And I think he got three shots in the whole game. Very little good ball. Like his goal was from a decent long ball nonetheless by Jason Flynn in injury time. He snaps the ball and puts it in the net. It's a low percentage play. You think of Cathal Mannion, he was withdrawn after what, the guts of 45 minutes. And did he ever get in the game? And this is a guy with 18 points from play throughout the season. A guy who looks like he could also be a regular all-star.
It's a funny one. When Cathal Mannion was being taken off, Conor Cooney jogged towards the sideline because he thought he was being taken off.
Yeah.
And he was left on the field for maybe another 10 minutes after. And like, not having a go or anything like that, but it's just clearly a player that was, you know, low on confidence as opposed to last year.
Why though? Like, why would Conor Cooney, who scored 8 points from play, was it in the Leinster final last year against Wexford, getting good ball in, nice variety of ball in? What's happened with Galway? Is it just down to the hunger levels, whereby if you're not putting in that many tackles, it means that you're not going to be winning enough primary ball coming out in the front foot and therefore being able to deliver early into those forwards? Is that what it's down to?
I tell you what, one thing I definitely noticed anyway is the pressure of the Galway forwards on the opposition puckout has been unreal all year. Like Whelan turned over a ball from Donald Toohey in the semi-final, didn't he? A short ball when he was out wing forward. And they were always putting pressure on the man with the ball if it went short. And Whelan was standing at, say, the 65, not maybe between 65 and 45 in the second half when Sean Finn got a puck out. And he was about 30 yards away from him. And he was just wiped and couldn't get near him. But I just thought, geez, if that was last year, if that was another game, he'd be closer and there'd be pressure on the strike. But it was just kind of indicative of it all. And he was being called back because Galway were under all sorts of pressure in the half back line and they wanted a comfort blanket. But he was kind of caught between two stools then as well. They just didn't have, there wasn't that same energy there. And the tackle count kind of does kind of speak for itself. When you're putting in 50 less tackles in a game, that's some amount of clean possession to the other team.
Yeah, we're going to come on to another chart now with Galway's tackle count shortly. But just a couple of more messages came in. Tony Keane on Facebook, Nicky's puckouts were unreal, accurate and clever. Couldn't agree more. John Daly on YouTube, what was the free count? Seemed like Limerick couldn't buy a free.
It was very low on Stacked and Galway's side. There was very few frees in the game in general.
Yeah.
Very few. But Galway had at least double the amount of frees Limerick had.
Yeah.
And only naturally, as you said, when the tackle count is that high, it's only natural that you're going to give away a few more.
And I have Finn on Twitter giving out about my team of the year that I don't have Owen Murphy in there. Well, look, I'm sorry. I mean, I've said Owen Murphy is the greatest goalkeeper of all time many times on the show. So what more do you want from me? I obviously realise he's brilliant, but Nicky Quaid with the definitive kind of flick of the year to stop Seamus Harnedy from burying him.
Owen Murphy's performance against Limerick was probably the greatest goalkeeper performance I've ever seen.
Yeah.
How he didn't concede a goal when he should have conceded five.
In a
pressure cooker like that.
He is ridiculous.
It just shows it's a mad decision to leave him off your team.
We'll have a we'll have a look at Galway's tackle count here. Now we've got that coming up. If you look at that in the forwards in the first half. And just to define what the tackle is, because people are going to get on to me about this, the way I have it defined in these charts is to either make contact with an opponent such as a way to alter his movement, to deny an opponent possession, to dispossess an opponent, or to a hook or a block on an opponent. So it's standardised throughout this. So, I mean, facts are facts. So if you look in total throughout the game, the Galway forwards had just 9 tackles, which is a bit of a joke, really. They had 49 tackles in the middle and just 43 at the backs. But look at that forward line, just 9 tackles, 6 in the first half, 3 in the second half. Like, you ask yourself, why did Galway underperform so badly? And I'm kind of asking, is it the ball in or whatever? That probably says it more than anything else. Joseph Cooney was the only forward to have scored from play inside the opening 51 minutes.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Davy Burke as well. And like, I know, like, obviously I said Joe Canning should be in the Hurler of the Year discussion, but In the first 40 minutes, Declan Hannan scored 2 points off him. Dermot Burns scored another, set up another score. Like, I'm not saying it was all him. I'm just saying he's part of a forward line that really wasn't doing everything it should have been doing from open play. And obviously he floated beautifully and took a few scores in the second half. Unbelievable from the frees. Should be in the Hurler of the Year discussion. Like, people go nuts when you say anything. They assume you therefore don't rate him as a player. I rate him massively as a player. But it's symptomatic of a forward line that maybe just didn't have the appetite.
9 tackles, though, is like...
Now, some of them might have been right on the 45, and maybe people can say, it should be in that sector there. But, you know, it's fairly cut and dry that this forward line wasn't tackling as it should.
And if you're a back, all you want to see is, you know, massive pressure and a back up the far end being turned or having to, you know, be under pressure or in a clearance or something like that. And it clearly shows like that the ball coming into the Limerick forward line was, you know, it's going to be fairly decent there's only 9 tackles throughout the game. But it's funny, when you actually see the numbers there, it does tell you an awful lot, because Galway have always kind of, last couple of years, been, David Burke has said regularly that we're the hardest working team. And the stats did back that up, in fairness. Mm. But, and a lot of that started, you know, it's an old cliche, but the full forward line is your first line of defence.
Yeah.
And followed quickly by the half hour line, and if you're only putting in 9 tackles, we'll
see in 2019 if they can adjust it. We'll actually have a line on what every team needs for 2019 shortly, but first of all we'll look at the All-Ireland Under-21 final this weekend. It's going to be Cork against Tipperary. It's the first ever All-Munster final. These teams previously did meet in a Munster final, and Tipperary got hockeyed. Fantastic performance from Cork, who went on to annihilate Wexford in the All-Ireland semi-final, 326 to 13 points. Tim O'Mahony with 2-2. Tipperary recovered from that and had a very good, like, I thought Liam Cahill set out the team very well, good game plan, protected his defence. Like, he'd let Brian McGrath played full back for the under-21s in the Munster final. He was left in oceans of space, wasn't protected, and he's probably not the fastest player the Tip have, so that's a recipe for disaster. The same issue that the Tip seniors have had for the last couple of years, not protecting the full back. But he protected, like, the team was set up an awful lot better. Tipperary won 317 to 117. 2 red cards for Galway players, both who did low blows, strangely, on the Tipperary players. How do you see this final going?
I think it's going to be an awful lot tighter. It's down with Liam Cahill on Tuesday, down in Care. They were just doing the launch for the match or whatever. Mm. And he wasn't giving the poor mount or anything like that, but he said that this is the best Cork underage team ever. And it's interesting because he played against the last two All-Ireland under-21 teams that they had in 97, when Timmy McCarthy got a last-minute goal, and in 98 as well, when they beat them down in Cork, which featured Don Logue, Dermot O'Sullivan, Jodine, Timmy McCarthy, Wayne Sherlock. So that's saying a lot, but he had a fair point in to say that Darragh Fitzgibbon is a massive name already, Shane Kingston, Mark Coleman or whatever, but the psyche of been the team that dished out the defeat, it is going to be it will be difficult, and it's easy with young players for a small bit of complacency to set in. Tip have a massive point to prove. Galway or Cork not so much. Cork have the pressure of, you know, 20 years since we've won an under 21 title. They do have all the big names. As we saw, Limerick had all the big names when Tipperary played them in the under 21 championship earlier this year and were cock a hoop after flying in the senior. Seamus Flanagan was taken off and Kyle Hayes was sent off. So I think it will be, I don't think Tip will win, but I think it will be an awful lot tighter than it was last year.
Was that Tip's victory over Limerick in the under 21 not partly due to the fact that Limerick had played a lot of senior games with the likes of Hayes and the likes of Flanagan? Perhaps they were a little bit tired at that point? Or am I doing a disservice to Tipperary?
I think you're doing a slight disservice, to be fair, because when you're winning games, when you're losing games and you're playing games week on week, it's very, very easy to get tired, and you naturally are more tired because you're down as well. When you're winning games, I don't think tiredness comes into it as much, personally myself.
It wasn't long after that the Limerick seniors had their only flop of the year when they got hammered by Clare. So, I mean, there might be some merit to it. We'll fight about that one afterwards.
I think it should be a really interesting game, though. And just some, like, I don't understand. I'm not sure why Declan Dalton wasn't in with the Cork seniors this year. I don't know why that was. But
an expert free taker. I mean, obviously they're not shy of free takers, but, like, he looks really good. He's had a bit of a knee injury, so they're hoping that he's okay. They have a huge team. Like, Tim O'Mahony is some target man for a full forward, scored 2-2 against Wexford.
Yeah, he played centre back earlier on the year for the seniors as well, which is funny. So he's obviously pretty versatile. He's a Kyle Hayes.
Yeah. But he came in Munster, he came in full forward in one of the games as well, or possibly even corner forward.
Jack O'Connor is very well got down in Cork as well. They think he's very tasty.
Pacey left hander, and of course Shane Kingston is another of those. Tipperary have, like, in the semi final, Ger Brown scored 1-2 from midfield, looked good. Paddy Fien's a battler. Jake Morris with 1-9, including, I think it was 6 free. Mark Keogh, actually, at wing forward, he had his red card rescinded rightly. He looks a bit like a Tom Morrissey, actually, with a goal threat. And Keane Darcy. A few of these guys could be seniors for Tipperary next year, whereas I suppose you'd have to give Cork the nod based on the fact that they've got 4 or 5 seniors right now. I think just for that reason, Cork might nudge it.
Probably so. I think Cork will win it, but it's a massive shop window, not just for Liam Cattle, actually. It's a shop window for Liam Cattle to put himself into the Tipperary senior position, but it's also a massive shop window for all these guys. There's a new manager coming in. There's probably going to be some faces that are going to leave the Tip fold, and probably going to be new faces that come in. So it's a huge kind of audition for them to get into the senior panel next year as well. So I think probably Cork by 4 or 5, and that will be maybe just pulling away at the very end.
Hopefully not. Hopefully it's Tip all the way. There's a few comments in again. Joe Murray on YouTube. Jonathan Glynn playing full forward, making Galway one-dimensional at times. I agree. Stephen Enright on Facebook. Limerick's movement was excellent. Would have been a travesty had they lost. Jack Corrigan on Facebook. Great game. The best final in years. Limerick too fast for Galway.
I'd say he's a Limerick man.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the best final in years. It was a great ending to the final, though. That might be up there at the best. The Irish Lions fans on YouTube. I thought the primary reason why the Galway forwards got such bad ball was because of the pressure and physicality by the Limerick forwards and the Galway backs. Example, when Flanagan floored McInerney. And by God, that was a fair hit. But the thing actually about it is, and that was early on in the game, Flanagan nailed McInerney. But straight away, there was four more Limerick jerseys around the Galway man.
That was symptomatic of the whole day. Like, there was, if one man goes in, there's at least two or three after him. It was great, like, from a Limerick point of view.
There's an Envine Craddock. I've definitely pronounced that name wrong, but I've done my best. Galway were obviously affected by replays. No energy at all the last day. Perhaps that's a bit of a factor.
Possibly, yeah.
They did have it
before the Leinster final. They would have had a relatively easy passage.
Oh, Leinster was handy for them as well.
Until the drawn game, and then, in fairness, it was over a quick period of time. They had a lot of games, so it's a fair point. And David Burke said there was guys up icing a tree in the morning as well, trying to get injuries right. Probably Gerard Mack and a few other lads as well. So that it all does come in fairness.
Yeah, and Eamon on Facebook, lads, it's quite simple. Galway had 5 games last year to win it. Last Sunday was their 9th replay versus Clare on a baking hot day just 2 weeks ago as well. Big difference. I mean, that's probably a fair point as well.
No, it is a fair point, yeah, in fairness. Yeah, in 2 weeks. Just because everything was so much more cramped this year, they probably didn't have the time. In previous years, they would have had 3 or 4 weeks to prepare, you know?
Yeah. So a line on every team for next year. We'll start off with the champions, Limerick. What do they need next year to stay at the same level?
Probably just a bit of fresh blood coming in, I would say. There are, like, On the whole of it, you'd say, like, why would you change the team or anything like that? But the guys will kind of dip in and out of form, and they're going to have a lot of kind of fresh legs to come in. I would just say a bit of freshness, and to try and it's a cliche thing, but to try and deal with the hype and the different things now. Like, they're going to be going to medal presentations, they're going to be at so many things between now and February and March. Yeah, like everywhere. Like, I thought Galway went maybe about that in the wrong way. I thought like Galway were nowhere in the media nearly the whole year. Very little.
Do you think that they kind of hid themselves away to a point where it became an issue?
Maybe a bit so, yeah. Yeah. I think you have to embrace it to a certain point. It can't be a blanket ban, right? You embrace it to a certain point, but you don't go over the top or anything either. I remember TJ Reid saying after he got hurled of the year that he'd tell people just where to go, because if it happened again, because he just did everything when he was hurled of the year. And you have to, it's finding that kind of fine balance, and not at the end of the day, your performances are what matters. So you can't kind of sell yourself too thin and underrated either. Like,
as well, I think you just need to be yourself. If you're normally a person who talks to the media and normally are comfortable with that, keep doing that. Yeah. If you're normally aren't comfortable with it, don't do it. Like, you see, like Shane Dowling, we mentioned earlier, great at chatting to the media, a dream for us. And after the All Ireland semi final against Cork, he goes, "We're not going up to march behind the band." Mm. And you know, that's the kind of stuff he'd say. Yeah, so keep saying it, Shane. Please do keep exactly, saying it, because like those sort of, it just doesn't make a difference. If you're used to it, it just doesn't really make a difference. And people like to be like, you know, let's control the controllables and all that. Fine, I get it. But that's not everybody's the same. We don't all tick the same way.
You can't. It's more nanny panel. Yeah. As you say, you have to treat... some people are different, like, and that's just a natural thing. You have to treat them a bit differently, too.
For John Kiely, I suppose, just keep freshening it up. Keep giving... like, put the panel in competition with each other, which is probably something that's the same for all the teams. But you want to make those panellists... a lot of... like, there'll be plenty of players who haven't seen game time during the year that'll be hugely frustrated. So I'd say one of the big things is give a few of them plenty of game time early in the year and make other lads think that your position is under threat. Mm. That's the way to keep it
fresh. The Limerick club run will be interesting too. Yeah. Because if Napier should go again, or probably Kilmaddock could maybe come out this year, or even Patrick's well. So it'll be interesting to see what availability he has in the new year, or even if there's club players maybe not come back till January.
Yeah, even Doon actually, with Pat Ryan, Darragh O'Donovan, Richie English, and there's one other name that I'm not thinking off the top of my head. Tipperary, what do you think they need next year?
They're going to have to get the right manager in place, firstly, anyway.
They have the best players, we know that.
They have a lot of the best players.
The best players.
In the best positions. They need to find a full-back, and they need to find a backup full-back as well. They need to have plenty of options in defence.
Just need to pick the best players in their best positions, which means they already have a 15 there. They don't actually have to worry about finding them. They actually have them. Just put them in their positions and leave them there.
Depends who comes in, obviously we'll have an opinion on where different lads play. So that's going to be interesting. Just if Liam Cattle were to come in, he would have an opinion, particularly on some of the 21s and the likes of Brian McGrath and where these guys are going to come in. So depending, or if Willie Matter comes in, or Tommy Dunn, or whoever is in the equation. I think it's a bit hard to say with Tip at the moment. You have to see who's all kind of over them first and what kind of his style is.
Yeah, and we mentioned under 21s coming through there, the likes of Jake Morris, Mark Keogh, Keen Darcy, Gerard Brown. So there are plenty of guys coming through. We'll fly through these. Cork, what do they need next year? Another ball winner maybe up front. They're not far away.
Need to find a full back and a centre back, in my opinion.
Yeah, actually.
Not find a full back and a centre back, but it just needs to be more solid. I don't think there's that. The spine, that's what won Galway and All Ireland. Yeah. Declan Hannan went back and sorted out a lot of Limerick's ills there as well. I just think they need to solidify that 3 and 6.
Tim O'Mahony might be that number 6.
Possibly we'll see. He's a lot of scope for physical development too.
Watford, a manager?
Yeah, a manager, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's crucial. I mean, obviously they need to find a manager. They will find a manager. I suppose then on the field, what do they need to do?
Probably need to play a bit more, be a bit more proactive on the pitch. I'd imagine when a new manager comes in, there will be a different style. We probably won't see the sweeper again. So that will take a bit of adapting for them, because Tadhg Bourke is going to have to mark a man now. And Barry Coughlin, if he's playing full-back, is going to have to mark a man without someone in front of him to sweep up. So that will take a while to put in. It's not just going to happen. That's not going to happen overnight. Mm. It'll be interesting again to see who they get in there.
And Shane Bennett, I wonder, hopefully he'll be back for them, and Tom Devine will be there. So they'll actually have more options because the last two seasons they've only had one or the other. Now they'll have both. Will Brick be back? He's the record championship appearance holder now.
He's so important, and Kevin Moore, and they're probably their two most important players in a way, and they're their two oldest players. So
Galway, Sean Loftus was really good when he came on the final. Yeah. I can see him being a player forcing into the team. Is it Fintan Burke as the wing back for the under 21s?
Very good. They're going to have to give these guys more game time throughout the league.
It was the same starting outfield 14 for the All-Ireland 2 years in a row. So
they're just going to have to try and make sure they have 23 or 24, and it's grand having 26 on the day, but are you happy with using them?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I just think they need to extend their plan. They've obviously plenty there. They've won three of the last four minor All-Irelands. Like, they just need to get, they're just going to have to get guys in there, I think.
Kilkenny?
Kilkenny were brilliant this year, weren't they? Like, what do Kilkenny need to do? Jesus, that's a fair question.
I think
question.
In the forward line, like, they've kind of whipped around different forwards and whipped them off the field good and early. Hugely reliant on TJ Reid. Get Richie Hogan fit. Mm. Make sure Wally Walsh stays fit. Colin Fennelly. Have those guys in from the start of the year, you know, because he was away with the Army, as was Paul Murphy. So I'm not sure if 2 years in a row they would be away. But if they can have those guys and Richie Hogan in from the very start of the year, keep everyone else fit, and just bring through one or two forwards, because, you know, the likes of Richie Lahey, who's brilliant for some parts of the year, got dropped later on.
Same with John Donnelly as well.
Donnelly. James Maher had a brilliant season. On another year, he'd be mentioned in the All-Star contention. Carlo, they're replacing your Offaly.
Yeah, they're gonna find it tough, in fairness. But in fairness, that's your reward, I suppose, for winning what they have. There's no point in saying anything. It's gonna be difficult. Probably one of the most important things for them is that they would have five or six really good auditions in 1B before they play the Leinster Championship. And they're going to have to learn on their feet fairly quickly. Marty Kavanagh coming back would be a big boost. They didn't have it for Championship and still ended up winning the Joe McDonagh. But it is going to be tough. They're probably going to have to probably find a couple more players as well. And there's not probably a whole lot there, given the bases that they have, that they're from three or four clubs.
And I think discipline is big as well. I think there's too many red cards with Carlo over the years as well. I think they're probably in for a bit of pain next year, but hopefully they can get that side of it right, be competitive in a few of the games at least. It'll be tough against the likes of Kilkenny and Galway for sure. Dublin next year, I think Dublin are going to kick on. I think a couple of the younger guys just need probably another 12 months under Pat Gilroy, because what he's doing seems to be working. Really good game plan. I think they're moving in the right direction.
Big waters for next year, I would say. Yeah. I would be expecting quite a lot. Probably the unluckiest team in the Championship, barring Watford's injuries. Like, Dublin were in the vicinity to beat the three teams they lost in Leinster.
Yeah.
And the Kilkenny game could have kind of taken their wind out of their sails, but in fairness they didn't, and they nearly beat Wexford the week after. So there's always already been, you know, one or two retirements. There's probably going to be a couple more, but there's loads of young fellas coming through there. And I'm looking forward to the second year of the project, because I didn't think the first year would go as well as it has. Mm. Definitely not in Championship anyway.
Clare,
probably, yeah.
I actually think they've got a lot of belief from this year, because, you know, the 5 years either side of the All-Ireland, they were absolutely rubbish for the most part. Mm. They won the league in 2016, of course. But I'm talking Championship. They've had Conor Cleary centre-back. I think centre-back, they might need to put... Like, I'm not saying that Conor Cleary isn't good enough to be in the team. He's a very good player. But I'm not sure if he's the right guy for centre-back.
I think Davy Mack is wasted a bit full-back, I have to say.
But then again, you need a bit of an athletic dog at full-back as well.
Yeah.
He's a fair competitor. So it's a tough one for them. I think that there's an element whereby, and in the wing-back spots at times as well, they're possibly carrying players a little bit, and I think they may have even punched above their weight this year.
They might well have had, really, but I didn't expect them to go as well in either of the semi-finals as they did, in fairness. Shane O'Donnell's going to be gone next year,
which is
a massive, massive blow for them, because realistically he pulled them back into the game against Galway. But like, they shouldn't have any fear. They should be striving to get back into that sort of situation again. But six is it's not a problem. It's just, it probably could be
stronger.
Is it stronger?
Something they could improve?
Yeah.
Kick on with. And then the final team, Wexford.
I'd be amazed, but I wouldn't want to see a sweeper in Wexford in 2019.
Hmm.
Not that it's outdated now at this stage, but I don't know. Are they going to win big games with a sweeper next year? I couldn't believe, like, they went down. They went down with the biggest whimper of all.
They went down with their heels on.
They did. Like, it was, I couldn't believe it. I actually couldn't believe it. Because they just, not that they threw in the flag or anything, but like, 6 points down, they were playing a sweeper. They weren't going to get back into the game. I was amazed.
Like, in 2017, they made clear progress. Yeah. And it was really good. But what have they done to evolve for the next year? And you see, like, a lot of the games, some of their big names are not performing at all. And then you see other guys being swapped in and out of the team. And, like, even when you saw the team against Clare, you're like, he's starting, really? And you think of the use of the ball at the back. You know, Sean Murphy's shown that he's a brilliant player, but his use of the ball late on in that game under no massive pressure, and the same with Mark Fanning coming out from the goals, they were just hitting the ball straight down to the far sweeper.
It was hard to believe, actually, under just, a Davy team.
I think Davy needs to have a bit of a rethink. I mean, who am I to tell Davy he's an All-Ireland winning manager? But, I mean, from the outside looking in, it looks a little bit like it needs a rethink and find a way to get your best men back in form and on the ball enough, because at the moment it just looks a little bit worrying for them.
Yeah, as I said, I would be amazed if come championship time that they're still playing a sweeper. I just think it has been shown to be outdated now. It might work the first year, but people were just playing around Sean Murphy, Clare were the in the All-Ireland quarter final, and I'd be surprised if we see that again next year.
And just before we go, let's look at the prices for the All-Ireland under 21 final between Tipperary and Cork this Sunday at the Gaelic grounds. You can get the special prices at offtheball.com/boilsports. So for this match, ooh, I have the under 21 game there. The match betting is, give me 1 second. So Cork are 5 to 1 on, draw is 11 to 1, Tipperary 9 to 2. Are you having any of that?
I'd have a nibble at 9 to 2 maybe in a final.
I'll tell you, Tip have a 5-point handicap here. So Tip at +5 is 21 to 20, 5 to 6 for Cork -5.
If I was gonna go with. I'd go a Tip at 9 to 2 if I was going with anything, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and
I think it's going to be around 4 or 5. So,
Yeah, I was actually wondering with Cork half time, full time, it's 2 to 5 as well. So,
oh, geez, you couldn't have that. Could be a Gael Forth breeze, and Tip could be a pitcher at 4 at half time.
Total points then 43.5. Are we looking at a high scoring game? Because Tip scored 317 and Cork scored 326 the last day.
317, 34 and 12, 46. Yeah, 60 minute game. 43, they're devils. They have it right on the line.
Because it's working out at, you know, more or less 20. It's working out at 22 points each, about 119 each.
Depending if Cork hit, you know, if Cork or either team hit a couple of goals, your 43 is probably going to be up. Tip over it.
And then just to look ahead on Boyle Sports as well to Dublin versus Tyrone. We're a week out, but what are you expecting there? I'll give you the prices.
I'm not expecting this landslide that most people seem to be expecting, or, you know, people saying that Tyrone winning, they get the dubious honour of playing Dublin and coming up to Croke Park for a hockey. And I don't see that. I think it'll be tight, definitely for 60 or 65 minutes. I do expect Dublin to pull away, but I think it's going to be much tighter than people expect.
It's 6 to 1 on for Dublin, 14 to 1 on for a draw, and 5 to 1 for Tyrone. 5 to 1 for Tyrone in All Ireland final.
Mickey Hart's never lost an All-Ireland final either.
If
I was going with something, it would be something like Tyrone half-time, Dublin full-time. Because Dublin have, you know, a half-time of a lot of games. They're only 2 points up against Galway as well. It wouldn't be inconceivable to think that Tyrone could be, you know, 9-8 or something like that up at half-time, and Dublin could win by 5 or 6.
Mm. So you were saying Tyrone half-time, was it Dublin
Tyrone
full-time?
Tyrone half-time, Dublin full-time,
That's 7 to 2. On Boyle Sports, so that's not bad as well.
Yeah, it's all right, yeah.
The handicap is -6, so Dublin -6 is evens, and Tyrone +6 is evens as well.
Three finals won by a pint.
Another by two, was it?
2015 was by three. So, like, the only, and some people have said that this is like their time now. This is the Kilkenny versus Waterford 2008 final to deliver this unbelievable final performance and leave it in no doubt that, you know, they're the best team of all time. But I don't think they're going to get their own way.
Mm. Okay, and just a couple more comments before we finish up on the last hurling show of the season. Tony Keane on Facebook, shows Galway weren't as potent and able to dispatch teams like last year. Those replays are equally as mentally draining as physical. Fellas are up and down. Mickey on Facebook, Limerick had 8 games, not as much a factor, I think. Eamon on YouTube replies to Mickey, Limerick had a game versus Carlow, not very taxing, I'd say, plus they had 3 weeks before the final, not two. Conor O'Neill on Twitter, Galway have no excuse. There was only one team in it, and that was Limerick. Also, Dublin could be a dark horse next year. Definitely the most unlucky team. I agree. Delboy on Twitter on the team of the year. Both Tom Morrissey. Yeah, we left out Tom Morrissey.
I've no problem saying that. I didn't.
The semi-final against Cork was the only game where he probably didn't
but
fly.
He's brilliant in the final, brilliant in Cork.
So both Tom Morrissey and Seamus Harnedy got most important / winning scores for Limerick and Cork all year. Morrissey even had to take the freeze when Galan was sent off against Cork.
Yeah, I didn't want to leave him out.
Yeah. Look, can we extend the team to 20 players? Yeah, maybe?
Really. Well, we probably should, given how important the panels are nowadays. Yeah. Shane Dowling would definitely get an All-Star anyway. Mm.
And just as we mentioned the All-Ireland final between Tyrone and Dublin as well, we have a heavyweight lineup taking shape for our All-Ireland football final, our Croke Park special. It's happening next Thursday, 30th of August. There's going to be some big names, I guess, there. Kieran McGeaney, James Horan and Jim McGuinness, Aidan O'Shea and Corus Daunton, Peter Canavan and Dublin legend Keith Barr. It's an exclusive off-air event, but you can get your tickets on offtheball.com/events right now before they're gone.
Definitely worth your time going there for Jim and for Cora to see what she has to say with the Carnacon debacle as well. So yeah, that'd be brilliant crack.
What have you got against the rest of the boys?
I don't have anything against the rest of them, but she's particularly topical at the moment.
Yes, she certainly is. So the final hurling show of the year.
Yeah.
It's been some stuff.
It's been a great year, in fairness. Yeah, I've probably the best year I can remember anyway, to be fair. Yeah. It's sad that it's over, but listen, we'll get stuck into the club championship now ourselves.
Don't be sad it's over, just be glad it happened.
That's like something you say when a relationship ended when you're 15 or something. Yeah. And you were down in the dumps for a week.
And we've been single since. All right, well, that's it for the final hurling show brought to you by Boyle Sports. We'll be back next year. We're just going to finish you off on a montage, just showing what it meant to Limerick after their fantastic All-Ireland win. We'll see you again.
They've been through a lot over the last 40 years in a sporting capacity and maybe even in a social capacity.
They were looking down and out, but they've come back to win by 6 points. Offaly 3-16, Limerick 2 goals and 13 points. What a comeback. Limerick just somehow hadn't it in them today, and it's Wexford a win by 2 points. Limerick did their level best, but it wasn't to be. Kilkenny had a wonderful start.
The 19th of August 2018, who will be All-Ireland champions? Who will see their dreams turn into reality? Whose names will be etched in history forever?
Just sweeping down towards Hill 16 now. They're attacking from all angles. Kyle Hayes again. He's got the run of the place. He's making himself at home. Picked up by McInerney. He's had his pocket picked by Morrissey. He's in. He's going. Oh, what a goal! Tom Morrissey with an absolute classic. Mistake by Toohey. Seized on by Peter Casey. He's got a man inside. It's Dowling who wants it. Gets it. Dowling!
I thought we were home and hosed, and credit to Galway, they came back into it and thundered into it. Joe Canning really led the way there, you know, but...
Canning, what a goal! 27 goals for Joe Canning, and this one is worth its weight in gold.
Just the last couple of minutes, the last 8 or 9 minutes was just the worst ever, like from 70 on, I thought it'd never end, and they were coming, and they nearly caught us, you know.
Between his own 45 and 65, it's going to drop short, but where will it fall? It's in a Limerick hand. It's taken clear.
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.